Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Apparently they had several calls to emergency officials that night, came over repeatedly, until finally, the emergency people were like, we've got to get power in here. We've got to evacuate these people.
There is, from a personal standpoint, I'm going to speak to this from a personal standpoint, because not only do I know and did I know people in nursing homes, but I'm going to end up in a nursing home sooner rather than later.
Michael was talking about that.
Just this morning.
Ingleside.
There is a reason.
With the dinner jacket.
Oh,
around
God.
The piano.
Is it three? Is it dinner yet?
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
All righty then. We are live at Chatter at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest, Jennifer Street Northwest, inside the line of the District of Columbia. We are serving breakfast. For some reason, the Chatter website says breakfast starts at 11:30. It doesn't. When we do this show, breakfast starts at 7. Jimmy Crilly knows that.
For some reason?
Got here. I don't have anything to do with the website. We have a very good crowd for breakfast today, for which I am grateful.
It's a pretty good crowd for a Friday.
Including Neil from Rockville, who turns 50 today.
Yeah.
More than a man. Superman.
And somehow, beyond all of our comprehensions, passed the bar exam. And is
still allowed to practice law.
I have no idea. Let me get to a couple of things. We have a picture here of Sloan Theodora. This is from Ellie from Sunnyside, Queens, continuing the tradition of notifying former and current sports writers, whom I've never actually met, but proud to say recently dined in the restaurant one partially owns, to most major life events. I'd like to formally inform you of the arrival of the newest little Sloan Theodora Stewart, born June 29th, 4:29 in the morning at Mount Sinai West in New York City. 6 pounds, 3 ounces, and of course, disinterested in most things that don't bring her pleasure. So you have that in common. The tradition of these notifications started, albeit unbeknownst to me, when my father walked by your boy, Mitch Albom, some 21 years ago and invited him to my bar mitzvah. Albom thought this extremely strange, and my father was quite displeased that he didn't show up. I began the continuation of this tradition a little less than 2 years ago when I sent you a wedding invitation, knowing you surely would never attend. Unlike my father, I had realistic expectations. My wish now is that my wife and baby are healthy and that Sloan and one Walker Thomas Kornheiser might become acquaintances, particularly as they are the most contemporary of contemporaries, having been born less than a week apart. Please let Michael know. So I just have. I got a wonderful mug here from Nate Nows in Beverly Hills, from Andrew Rubin in Los Angeles. You so graciously gave me that absurd Bobby Knight sweater many years ago. I have no knowledge of this. I thought that I would reciprocate, and I was in Nate Nows the other day. I picked up this mug for you. You can hand it over to Wilbon if you want, which is very nice. Thank you very much for that. And some people here from Durham, North Carolina, who actually met in grad school, apparently, at North Carolina, but now she works at Duke, have given this for Bootsy.
That is so cute.
Have
it
given us
adorable.
A Duke bib for Bootsy.
This is very timely. Bootsy has been drooling
with
much more vigor than before.
Okay, so Bootsy now
What's
has
the Bootsy
this.
Bib?
Somebody
very
from
cool.
the University of Pennsylvania might want to get a Pennsylvania bib because
dueling
now we
bibs.
We have a Duke bib. Michael is putting it on. Michael came over last night. Baby Bootsy was over in the house last night, and
Did you touch the poke?
I poked him. I touched him. I let him hold my fingers. I explained that I was his older and smaller grandfather. And he smiled at me.
Aww.
He smiled at me. Now, that is victory number one. Victory number two, Carol picked him
still
up.
Cries
and
when
he
Carol...
wept.
Oh,
he screamed.
That makes you so happy.
He cried. Yeah, that's right. Michael, am I making this up? I'm not.
She took Bootsy into the living room. Dad's just in the kitchen laughing maniacally.
Right.
But when we left, you had just washed your hands after cleaning the dishes. Thank you for cleaning the dishes.
My pleasure.
And you did not dry your hands before you touched the boy
touched
and
Bootsy.
Blessed him on the forehead for some reason. So we get home and he's soaking
water.
Wet.
I thought I did very well. Michael Cook, Gary has grown these. Are they large for the breed, for jalapenos?
They're large, yeah. I think they're called like a big hybrid jalapeno. I mean, that's a big jalapeno.
So, Michael, explain what you did, and I think you went back and forth with Gary on this.
Well, I cut them in half lengthwise, and then I scooped out the seeds.
You people didn't think you were getting a cooking lesson today.
Scooped
right.
out the seeds and the membrane, and I actually made a soft cheese mix to put into the jalapeno that I would grill. So that was some cream cheese, a little bit of shredded cheddar, I used some garlic powder and some onion flakes, mixed that together, incorporated that.
Michael laughed at us. We apparently had far too much garlic powder in the house.
Yeah, you shouldn't have garlic powder, onion flakes.
So, okay. Anyway, so it was really, they
were
really good.
There's garlic and there's onions.
And they were surprisingly good. right? We both thought, wow,
I knew they'd
this
be
is
good. You didn't want to try.
But then I ended up eating two or three of them.
Yeah, I cooked these.
They were not hot. The jalapeno part was no longer burning the, your mouth and on.
The grill nails soften up, and actually, not that they're a sweet pepper, but they'll sweeten up. Some of that heat will
very
come out
good.
Of them.
They're very good. So, good job out of you and steak. Good job out of you all the way around.
Chief Grilling Officer.
Yeah. Well, I now feel ashamed after Ms. McManus has attacked my balance of flavors.
Yeah, that's what you would have to do.
You did what was there. You
Correct.
Used what
right.
was there.
That was his, as he likes to say, flavor profile for
yes.
the night.
Yes, well, that's a good flavor profile, but there are garlic cloves and there are onions, and you can use those instead of dehydrated onion powder and
well, what,
onion
what's good about the
powder.
Onion when flakes that we have in the house? We bought them in 1992.
I was going to say, yes, what's exactly. the over-under on when that garlic powder was yes. purchased?
Completely expired.
Used by.
Oh, it's completely.
But as long as it tastes good.
Tremendously
all
expired. All right, let's get into some sports. The Indians last night made it 22 in a row. Francisco Lindor with two out and two strikes in the ninth, down 2-1, delivers a hit that ties the game. And then Jay Bruce, I guess they acquired Jay Bruce from the Mets, fairly recently.
Yeah.
Jay Bruce in the bottom of the 10th hits a walk-off single. That's 22 in the 22 games, and I found this not, you know, I don't think it's remarkable, but I was a little bit surprised. In the 22 games, not once did they go to extra innings. So they're killing people.
Well, that's what
they're killing
That's
people.
What sort of struck me was yesterday they talked about 104, now it's 105 run differential in 22 games. The fact Livy mentioned they had hit more home runs than
they
had
given up runs, which is still true.
And it was striking last night. Because you would think to win 22 in a row in Major League Baseball, you would need some clutch hitting.
Yes.
And I think that was really the first sort of bit of clutch hitting.
No extra innings. Now, so the question comes up because, and like Harley is so crazed about this. Harley was sending me pictures last night of the winning hit and things like that because he's from Cleveland. Not to go half empty, but from a sports writer standpoint, you think, are they peaking too soon? Are they peaking too soon? They're a month away.
I love watching them. They're a great team. I was rooting for them last year, not to win the series because I wanted the Cubs.
The Cubs deserved it, but now they should win it.
But they should win it. But the whole time I'm watching them, I'm thinking, I'm so glad this isn't the Nats. I'm so glad this isn't the Nats.
Because you would say the Nats are peaking too soon.
Well, a run like this to earn a wild card, that would concern me. But the fact of the matter is, a run like this is earning them a home field advantage
all the way through
a series.
Yeah, they passed Houston.
Yeah.
Speaking of Houston, the Houston Texans played last night. And this is something to talk about because this is consequential to me. The Texans beat the Cincinnati Bengals 13-9 in a game that I watched sparingly. I'm not staying up all night to watch those two teams. Deshaun Watson, the great oddity in his life, he became the third quarterback in the history of the league to start his first NFL game on his birthday. He's 22 years old yesterday. The other two are Mark Brunell, who became at one time probably a Pro Bowl player.
Yeah, he was a Pro Bowl player.
And Brock Osweiler, who's a clown, and nobody wants him at all on the team. And Deshaun Watson, he gets the win. Cincinnati falls to 0-2. Deshaun Watson, the biggest play of the game was the only touchdown. He ran 49 yards for a touchdown. Other than that, 15-24 for 125 is nothing. 125 yards passing is absolutely nothing. The greater story here to me is Cincinnati. The greatest story is now Cincinnati has opened up 0-2 at home. Both games at home.
And no,
no touchdowns.
Jerry, a touchdown.
Andy Dalton, who people think is an almost elite quarterback, though he never wins in the playoffs. 20 of 35 for 224. No scores. Cincinnati, that's it. Right? They're done.
Cincinnati
and Arizona, to me, are done.
Interesting thing about about two home openers without a touchdown. Last time it was done was the 1938 Eagles they mentioned on the broadcast last night. I would not have guessed it had been that long.
80 years ago. Yeah.
But the Cincinnati...
We were in third grade.
I think. 80 years ago.
Reminds me
sending out applications.
I don't know how far I'm going back, whether it's 10, 15 years, but reminds me of a Detroit Lions team. I think it was under Jim Schwartz that had a near mutiny. I mean, Cincinnati's defense gave up 20, actually 13, because I think the Ravens had a defensive touchdown last week. They certainly played well enough last night, giving up almost nothing to a guy who looked a little bit like, and I'm not making a prediction here, this was just his first start, but a little bit like RG3, and that he was holding the ball way too long.
That's right.
Couldn't see anything, and was completely
electrifying when
he ran. You can
run away for a while, and then somebody knocks you down and turns your ankle, and then you don't run away.
I mean, I think Deshaun Watson will be a good quarterback, but that team, I would not be surprised if they started to fracture here with the sort of little offense-defense war, because that defense has played well enough to win both these games. The offense has done nothing.
What about Andy Dalton?
To me, the play of the game...
Are they going to dump this?
The play of the game was him tackling Jadeavion Clowney.
Yeah, that was great.
That's
could
right.
not believe that.
I love the way Clowney holds the football. Isn't it
hysterical? Out like a
he must have the hugest hands.
Yeah. Well, Clowney has still made the single greatest play anybody's ever seen.
Oh, that was
well. They remember, A.J. McCarron's on the bench there, so there will be people
is
clamoring
McCarron
for him.
Is A.J. McCarron any good?
He's looked good in limited action.
He's Alabama,
right?
Yeah.
In Alabama, any of the Alabama recent quarterbacks done anything? I don't think they have. I mean, they win a lot of national championships, but they're not pro.
And I don't know that you can put it all on Andy Dalton either. I mean, they've played a couple of very good defenses in the Ravens.
But what's going to happen is Cincinnati has made the playoffs 4 or 5 years out of the last 5 or 6 years. Now, they've never won a playoff game.
Right.
Marvin Lewis, I believe I'm right in this, other than Bill Belichick, is the longest tenured coach.
I think
that's
correct.
And he's certainly done a terrific job in getting them to the playoffs, but they don't win. And he's banked all of this on offense on Andy Dalton. And Andy Dalton was worse last year than ever before and is starting out this season in relatively mediocre style. Do they dump both of them? Is it the end of this year?
Well,
is it over?
There are not many NFL owners who would endure what the Bengals owners have endured with Lewis and Dalton, don't you think?
Well, I think Lewis has been great for them. Before him, they didn't make the playoffs for 15 years.
I agree, but he can't get it done.
No, it doesn't. He doesn't. It's very odd. It's very odd to watch. And disconcerting, I think, what we have learned in football recently is that you have to make bold moves if you're going to improve. I look at them as I look at Arizona, as a team where the quarterback is past his prime and they're going to sink, and they're going to sink rapidly.
This happens. Good enough to win, but
that's right. Carson Palmer's not a kid. He's 38 years old. He doesn't look to have any particular arm strength. He's beginning to look like Peyton Manning, at the end, right, where you go, whoa, is that good enough? And teams in the NFL, they fall and they don't get up. And I think that those are the two teams.
Packers next game?
That's tough.
I mean, Bengals next game is at the Packers.
That's tough.
Yeah.
So you have to figure that's 0-3. And then they've got at the Browns, Bills at home.
You win those.
Those.
I would think. We have an odd day today in that we are guest loaded. We have Ann Hornaday. We believe we have James Carville. Chuck Todd coming out of a 2-5. Mm. We'll see. We'll see how long we have Chuck Todd. Not to put too much. Maybe Chuck Todd is the Andy Dalton of this show. We don't really know at this point. So we will take a break now. Ann Hornaday will join us when we return. As I said, very big crowd. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a new read for us. This is the Spotify read.
That's right, Spotify.
Normally, get
God.
A whole
Who's
page, a copy in front of me, and this one is three lines.
Right.
I'm just going to read it. Love this podcast? Well, did you know you can listen to it on Spotify while still enjoying your favorite tunes? It's easy. Just look for the podcast section within the Browse tab on your mobile device or search for your favorite shows. To find more podcasts, head to spotify.com/podcasts. That's it.
That's three.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by Will Salisbury, who writes, "Hey, team. Will here from St. Louis's Money for Guns. Here's a sweet little waltz to end your week called Such a Beautiful Face, obviously about Ms. McManus. Hope all is well in the nation's capital, and tell Bootsy I owe him a shot at Jameson after him bailing me out of the county clink last night. Word to the wise, that kid's formula is 100 proof. I have no idea what that means. But we like this. Waltzes are always nice.
Yeah, it's a lovely song.
All right, Ann Hornaday is with us. She is back from the Toronto Film Festival. Whenever you go to these film festivals, I'm never sure what I can ask you about, because I'm never sure what opens now or what opens in 6 weeks or something like that. I spent the last 2 weeks watching these commercials, nonstop commercials, little bitty trailers for American Assassin with Michael Keaton and some other guy. And now I find out it's terrible. It's not your review, but one of your colleagues reviews it that it's terrible. And I'm sort of out of sync in terms of what's current and what's not. What is current? What just happened that you can review?
Well, like one of the movies I saw up there is Mother, which opens today.
Right.
So that's pretty current.
Okay.
And I need to kind of pull up the schedule. I mean, these are all movies that are probably going to be opening between now and the end of the year. These are the movies that we are going to be talking about at awards time. So, like, we also saw Battle of the Sexes, which is about the Billie Jean King, Bobby Riggs.
There
Rick.
Are
that
so
opens
many
week.
Sports movies.
Right. Unbelievable. Yeah. And they were good. They were good.
There's the Borg McEnroe movie. Yes. There's a movie about Tanya Harding.
Yeah. Yes. Which, which was the favorite. I mean, I didn't get to see it, but it was by far the one that everyone was saying the most about. Like, it was surprising. They were surprised how much they liked it and how good it is. I cannot wait to see it.
We lived that one.
Yes, we did.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But, you know, it's sort of like OJ, which is, I don't really need to go back to that. Like what can I learn? But apparently it is a really very deep, you know, touching, it actually does reveal things that maybe we didn't know. And it stars Margot Robbie, who I think is a terrific actress, but it's a real showcase for her. So I'm excited about that. Victoria and Abdul, that'll open in a couple of weeks. You know, so these, Mark Felt, you know, the real deep throat, his biopic with Liam Neeson playing him, that comes out early October. I saw Clooney's movie, Suburbicon, that's going to be coming out, I think, like early November, something like that. So these are all movies that are just going to be coming out. These are the fall movies, you know, for, no, actually, the Suburbicon is October 27. So, yeah, these are just movies that are going to be kind of,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, so. let me get to the Billie Jean King Barbie Riggs movie, because I mentioned this the other day, as I'm glad that you've seen it. And I'm not asking for a full review. I have a very specific question on this. I looked at Steve Carell in the trailers, and it is uncanny how much he looks like Barbie Riggs. Now, I haven't seen any tennis action or anything like that, but his look is
uncanny.
100% Barbie Riggs. Emma Stone, and I saw her interviewed with Billie Jean King at the U.S. Open. Pam Shriver did that interview going back and forth. Emma Stone, now blonde, looks nothing to me like Billie Jean King. And I've seen the wigs, and I've seen the large aviator glasses. Is she, in your mind, does she look enough like Billie Jean King?
You know, the looking thing, I think we can get caught up in that. And I agree, you know, it is uncanny with the Carell.
Oh.
That's uncanny. But it doesn't take away, you know, just the fact that she's not as uncanny does not take away from her characterization. You know what I mean? I think that there's physical resemblance, which can be fun, but it really comes down to inhabiting a character. And that doesn't necessarily... And the same thing is true of Borg McEnroe, by the way. The guy that plays Borg is uncanny in terms of how he looks like Borg.
Right.
Shia LaBeouf doesn't look like McEnroe, but he inhabits that character beautifully, and it's actually, I think, a seamless marriage between his on- and off-screen persona with McEnroe's persona in terms of what people bring, the baggage they bring to him, you know?
See, this is a problem for me, and this is the problem of having been a sports writer. The problem is I expect realism. I know that, that most football movies were garbage. There didn't, until we got to Friday Night Lights, which actually looked like football players. Most baseball movies, guys have no swings whatsoever, and you go, this, you know, they're not really throwing it or anything like that. And so, and I know Billie Jean King. I know her personally. I know her professionally. I covered Billie Jean King. She was a great athlete. She was tough. She was unbelievable. Unlike Chris Evert, she was much more physical when she played. Chris Evert would stand at the baseline and just whack away and cut you down and cut your heart out. But Billie Jean King moved in a different way. Emma Stone, I don't know. Does it work?
Yeah.
Does it work?
You know, judging from what, you know, you may not find, you know, that might take you out of this particular movie. I think the tennis in Borg McEnroe was stunning to me. The actual physical tennis. I mean, it was just stunning, and I think it was, I don't know how they, I think part of it was a little bit of CGI, like they put in the ball digitally, so the guys could really perfect their moves.
Without having to
not
hit
worry
the ball.
About hitting a ball, which is smart, you know, because that does actually, I think, help the realism. With the King and the Riggs, you know, I will say, I didn't find the tennis nearly as convincing, but it's really more about the stunt, you know, it's about the spectacle and about their journeys. It's like, you know, they're both facing down demons in their own lives. that they're bringing to this thing. And so it's not as much about the actual physical tennis.
But you can understand how if I'm used to watching sports in real time, and
it's the same problem everybody has with Washington movies, the people that actually work in intelligence and military intelligence. You know, it's like it drives them crazy. It's just you either can step out of it or you can't.
The worst is a basketball movie when a 5'10" guy is going against guys who are 6'11" and making impossible shots, and you go, this cannot be. It cannot happen.
I know,
happen.
It's all the trick photography. Yeah, I know. Well, they're getting better at it, you know. But these movies, I was really surprised. I was especially, Borg McEnroe really was a pleasant surprise. I thought that it was just terrific.
All right, let's get to this movie, Mother, because Jennifer Lawrence, I think most people who watch a lot of movies over the last 6 to 8 years would say, she's great. She's like, she's number one. Whatever she does, if you talk about inhabiting a character, it always appears. Even in a sort of a lightweight movie like Joy, she was fantastic. She's just...
Totally.
She's that
She transforms herself in every movie. She's like a different person.
She's that good. What is this movie? What is it?
This is a really strange movie. And you know, what I say in the review is this really... this movie's a testament to what you just said. It is such a love letter to her, and she's in pretty much every single shot. She literally carries this movie, and she holds the camera in a way that very few people are able to hold the camera. And at the beginning, it's kind of a psychological thriller. She plays a young woman married to a poet, played by Javier Bardem.
He is scary in movies. He's really good.
But he can be sexy, too.
I know, but he's very sexy. Like in No Country for Old Men. Yeah. I mean, please, if you see that guy coming, get out.
The haircut.
Oh, my God.
Get out.
But anyway, so they're living in this beautiful Victorian house out in the middle of nowhere, and he's trying to write his new book. And she's trying to renovate
a Final Four mystery. Was he trying to like? Not just an aside. Go ahead.
Right. And so, then comes a knock, and a stranger comes to the door, and it's Ed Harris. Oh, it's Ed Harris.
I love him.
It's always dangerous. By the way, when he knocked on the door in that movie with. What was the movie?
Own the diner. Viggo Mortensen?
Yeah, they own the diner outside of Philadelphia.
My God.
No. A History of Violence. When he enters that movie, bad stuff happens.
It's just amazing. And so then he enters the scene, and then he's joined. That character is joined by his wife, played by Michelle Pfeiffer, also incredibly sexy. It's like a sexy off. But anyway, what ensues is a very weird, it's almost like The Shining, and Rosemary's Baby. You know, it's this kind of gothic horror. You're not sure what's going on.
The scariest movie of all time.
The house starts acting weird. They all start acting weird. Jennifer Lawrence doesn't know what's going on. I will say, I was with this movie. I mean, it was just, it's Darren Aronofsky, who did Requiem for a Dream. You know, he did The Fountain. He's done some really, he goes there. He does really weird stuff.
Didn't he do the wrestler movie with Mickey Rourke?
Yeah.
Beautiful movie.
Oh!
Black Swan, but he goes into, you know, like, good. He just pushes it. He pushes it, and for my taste, he pushes it beyond the limit. I mean, I just think he kind of, whatever kind of narrative thread he has is very obscure, but he really kind of lets it go in this kind of crazy, graphic, bizarre climax. But I will say, in terms of setting up an environment and setting up tension and setting up a great sort of, you know, showcase for Jennifer Lawrence, it is really something to behold. But ultimately, I found it frustrating. I just wish he had a little bit more self-control with the actual, you know, the filmmaking. But it's a something. I mean, it's like you're watching it going, wow. I mean, it's kind of cool to watch a filmmaker go for broke, even if it doesn't always work.
Well, you know, go big or go home.
Was that equivocal enough? Yeah.
No, that's fine. I didn't come 3,000 miles to lay up, as we like to say in the golf game. So, okay. Just because Nigel is here and Nigel loved Dunkirk so much, I have to ask about Darkest Hour.
One of my favorites. Nigel's gonna like it.
Well, I'm particularly pleased about who's playing Churchill.
Oldman. It is absolutely okay. First, it is an amazing performance. Just cunning and crafty and funny and wonderful. But then there's all this other, like, Ben Mendelsohn plays King George. Oh. No, who was the king then?
George.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the King's Speech king.
Yes.
I mean, I will always think of him
Elizabeth's
that way.
Father.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Elizabeth's father, exactly. Yes. Thank you very much. And that is also, I thought, a terrific, terrific performance. It's directed by Joel Wright, who, oddly enough, did a great Dunkirk scene in a movie called Atonement several years ago.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that?
Yes.
Beautiful tracking shot.
Right.
But this isn't really about Dunkirk. I mean, I didn't realize it centers around the Dunkirk evacuation, but it's really about Churchill's this moment in his political life. So Dunkirk plays a role, but it's not the only thing. And it's about his relationship with Clemmy, played by Kristen Scott Thomas, who's absolutely fantastic. It looks fabulous because Joe Wright is a very visual thinker. He's a very beautiful, he has a great sense of staging and rhythm and stagecraft. So it's just a delightful movie. It's brilliantly written. I mean, I can't say enough about it. It was really a delightful movie to watch.
Now, Anne, did you see John Lithgow's performance?
Oh, yes, which I love.
Churchill in The Crown. So,
I love that.
I don't like Lithgow, but I liked him I liked him as that Churchill. So I'm wondering how Gary Oldman's going to compare with Lithgow.
I think we're awash in good Churchill.
Okay,
you know,
good.
Sort of like they're very compatible. You know, obviously the focus is on him in this movie, and he's more of a peripheral character in The Crown, although I agree with you. I think it's a wonderful performance. I do think this is a little bit more fully inhabited, just only because he has more time, you know, to develop the character.
Is he thick physically? Thick physically? Is he big?
Oh, yes.
Like Churchill?
Oh, you won't recognize. You literally, I know it's a cliche, you will not recognize.
Okay.
You cannot see one iota of Gary Oldman in this character. He just disappears.
Because I know that he beat out Shia LaBeouf for that role.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's wonderful. It's really wonderful. It's one of those movies that I'm going to be able to... I always like a movie, one or two, that I can just send people to with no caveats. You know, regardless of age or taste or whatever, you know, there's just, it's an all-rounder. It's like, yes, go. You'll love it. I mean, it's just that kind of a movie. It's really wonderful. Very, very well done.
Thank you, Anne.
Always a pleasure.
And before we let Anne go, if you like Anne in this segment, and I know everyone loves Anne, you can get more of her because she's taping a podcast at the Movies with Arch and Anne later this morning, right here at Chatter. And that'll be posted to iTunes later this afternoon.
Fantastic.
Great.
Fantastic. All right, we will take a break now. We will come back with James Carville and news. Carville will be in the news segment. He could go 10 seconds. He could go 3 minutes.
Never know. Right.
We don't really know. We never have any idea. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Harry's ad, which is considerably more lengthy than the ad we did a little bit earlier in the show. What do you love most about shaving with Harry's? Well, most people would just say that they actually shave with Harry's, you know, and they get through this and it feels good when they're done.
Right.
I mean, that's, you know, it's not like shaving is eating, you know, a 24-ounce porterhouse steak bone in. I mean, it's really not. Harry's is so confident you're going to love their blades. They'll give you their trial shave set for free when you sign up at harrys.com/TonyK. All you have to do is pay for shipping. Harry's is all about a great shave at a fair price, which is why 3 million guys and more have switched to Harry's. Jeff and Andy, who claim they're two ordinary guys who were fed up with buying overpriced razors, they started Harry's to fix shaving. They bought their own German factory with 100 years of blade-making experience to ensure the highest quality. All their products are backed by a 100% quality guarantee. Harry's offers their blades at half the price of the leading five-blade razor, selling directly to you over the internet. I'm always intrigued when they say the leading five-blade razor because there's two leading companies, and they never name which one, and both come to mind immediately. To claim your free trial offer from Harry's today, which is a $13 value for free when you sign up, all you have to do is cover shipping. It includes a weighted ergonomic razor handle, 5 precision-engineered blades with lubricating strips and trimmer blades, a rich lathering shave gel, a travel blade cover. To get your free trial set, all you have to do is to go to harrys.com, harrys.com/TonyK right now. That's harrys.com/TonyK.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Rob Dundon sent this in. It's from the Cape Cod's Crooked Coast. It's called No Caroline No, not Caroline No. Right? Sadly, we missed the event on September 8th in Newport, Rhode Island, where the band played at Poor Judgment, but we are supportive of the band.
Right? Oh, absolutely, Crooked Coast.
And also, guitarist Luke and wife Grace Vos welcomed baby Jane earlier this month.
Oh, sweet.
Not
baby
Lady Jane.
Jane,
but baby Jane.
Baby Jane.
Baby Jane.
Sweet baby
What
Jane.
Happened to baby Jane? Wasn't that a movie?
Yeah, Joan Crawford. Yeah. Betty Davis.
James Carville joins us now. We forgot all about Carville last week, which was a mistake on our part.
Yes.
He went 11-0.
Yeah, when you say our part, you put up on Nigel's part. It was my fault.
All right, so what do you like?
Well, Peter had me. I've been, the last 22 games, I've had Cleveland Indians on the money line.
Oh, that's great. Good for you.
All right, let's go. Start Kansas State Vanderbilt. Bill Snyder is probably the best football coach in the history of college football, if you took what he has and what he does with it.
Yep.
And he's going to win by more than 4.5 in Nashville.
So right. Vanderbilt is a home dog getting 4.5.
Right.
Okay, and you take Kansas State.
Kansas State. I like Kansas State. I do. And okay. Then Tennessee goes to Florida.
Right.
And Florida's a favorite by what? What do y'all have, 4.5 there, too?
What's the number? I'm looking for that on the board. Do you know the game number?
Yeah. All right.
I'll find it, but go ahead. Give us your notes.
Florida. They had 10 guys out the first game. Everybody said, oh, Michigan, you know, Florida's going to be terrible. You know, we lose 10 people. That's a lot of people that come back. And the other one I like is go slightly to the southwest, to Tampa Bay for the pro game.
Mm-hmm.
And Tampa Bay is playing the Bears. If you buy the hook, I'd take it at 7. I'd lay 7. And the reason is simple. They hadn't played a game yet. And they're totally fresh. They're at home. The Bears are on the road. This looks like a perfect spot.
Don't even need to buy it. It's widely available. It's -7.
Seven. You can have 7 at that point.
The Tampa Bay Bucks, the Florida Gators, and the Kansas State Wildcats.
Let me just ask you one. I want to ask you about Florida for a second, because not only do they get players back, but because of that hurricane, they really have something to play for. I like that. I like that play as well. I do.
In Tennessee, and it came back. You know, but they're not bad. You know, you remember some years ago, the Florida-Tennessee game was like one of the top games on the college football card.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When Philip Fulmer was coaching at Tennessee. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a long, I mean.
Spurrier was at Florida. I mean, yeah. It was a big game in there. I was kind of played early in the season. It was a game I really looked forward to. And you know, that probably might be coming back.
Tennessee's had 3 or 4 different coaches, and it hasn't really worked out. And they've been so overshadowed in the SEC, so overshadowed. So
people that know college football in the South tell me that the problem Tennessee has is the high school football in Tennessee is not as good as it is in the surrounding states.
Well, certainly not as good as Alabama.
I believe it.
Yeah, that's probably true. All right, we watch these games with interest. Thank you, James.
All right, Cleveland Indians, last 22. I'm a genius.
Yeah.
We knew that. Fantastic. We already knew he's a genius.
Fantastic. What do you got for us, Nigel? You have news.
I turned my microphone on. Yeah, there we go. Reset the board.
Reset the sign.
Yeah, there you go. And normally we don't like to start off the news with a melancholy happy trails. But if you played Phil Leotardo and Billy Batts, two of the more memorable deaths on screen, yes, Frank Vincent passed away earlier this week. Oh. Some reporting at the age of 80, some saying 78. But either way, just
Phil Leotardo, for those of you who don't remember, came to an untimely end.
At a gas station.
At a gas station.
There's no one who doesn't remember. For those that didn't see it. If you saw it, you don't forget it.
An RV cracked his head like an egg.
Well, yeah, and Gary,
after he'd been shot twice.
Right.
Yes, Gary, I believe you said, I can't, you know, not see that
scene. You can't unsee it.
No. Right. But actually, you can't unhear it, because that's the sound. It's like the
melon crushing.
Like a grape. Yeah. Yes. And then, of course, Billy Batts.
Yeah.
You know, go get your shine,
box. Yeah. Shine box. Yeah, sure.
So, yes.
And Phil Leotardo's grandchildren were in the back seat.
Right.
Do you remember that?
Of course.
Right.
Yeah.
How did the car get into neutral? I forget that.
Yeah. The wife got out to see what happened to Phil, and the car starts rolling with the grandchildren in the back seat.
Yes. And I guess there's a story written in the obit here in the Washington Post. Mr. Vincent was less a household name than a household face, instantly recognizable for his many gangster roles. He once told the Post that he was on location for a film shoot in Rhode Island when a 12-year-old boy asked for his autograph. "You know who I am," Mr. Vincent said. The little boy replied, "Yes, you are made man."
Yes.
I love the disputed age, like he's Daniel Almonte or something. He's 78 or 80, whatever it's
exactly. And now to baseball, Mr. Tony. The Nationals, spurred on by Victor Robles, beat the Braves 5-2.
Michael's excited that Victor Robles is getting in, right?
I love
all in
him
for Robles.
Yeah, you think he's the next big thing?
Well, I'm just saying there's certain big names in this area that might not be here in a short period of time. So it's exciting.
Right. That's right. Jason Worth and Bryce Harper come to mind immediately. Yeah. Ryan Zimmerman as well. I mean, they may not be here on the long term. You don't know.
In Philadelphia, Mr. Tony,
Reese Hoskins.
Got the Dodgers tonight, by the way.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. This is the beginning of a three-game series.
Be interesting to see how this series goes, because this conceivably could be for home field advantage.
Well, Boz walking away from that today.
Yes.
Boz saying, that's not important. Don't get carried away with that. That's not important. Keep your distance from them. You want the Cubs. It's just, you know, it's just...
By the way, the Indians are now just three games back of the Dodgers for the best record in all of baseball.
Oh.
So it's very conceivable they could have the overall best record.
Oh, so because we're not doing it anymore with
right,
the...
Right, it's no more All-Star game.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
The best record in each series, I guess.
Good.
But in Philadelphia, Reese Hoskins, he's hitting a lot of home runs. How many? 18 in just 34 games since his call-up.
Nobody's ever done this.
No.
He's like five or six clear of the next greatest person ever to start off with home runs.
Actually, nine games. Gary Sanchez of the Yankees set it last year with 18 homers in 45 games.
What's he doing this year? Not much.
Actually, he just hit another home run last night.
He's not Aaron Judge.
No, he's not Aaron Judge, but I think it's 31, and he just broke the record for home runs in a season by the Yankees. Breaking Posada and
for catch
and Yogi Berra, yeah, for catcher.
Because the home run record is 61.
61,
so
yeah.
So he didn't break that.
I'm sorry, for a catcher, yes.
Yeah, thank
but that's
you.
Still, I mean, there's been some great catches that have played.
Yes, Howard comes to mind.
Bill Dickey and Yogi Berra. Thomas, yeah.
Yes, yes.
So, but Hoskins obviously off to a great start.
Right.
Phil Chenier is going to get his number retired by the Washington Wizards.
So this I want to talk about a little bit. This I want to talk about because it's very lovely how it happened. They were doing some promotional thing with Bradley Beal, and Bradley Beal said, how'd you like to get your number retired? And Chenier said, well, if it happens, it happens. And Bradley Beal said, well, it's going to happen. So it's number 45. And Phil Chenier played on the greatest of all the Bullets teams with Elvin Hayes and
Wes
Unseld, Earl Monroe. And he's there with great people. I believe that he should. I don't think he was as a player... it's an automatic thing. But I think in everything he's done for
contributions.
The team over the last 20, 25 years on television, I think this is absolutely the right thing to do. And I still don't understand why he got canned. I mean, I don't. I mean, you can slice it any way you want. He got canned. You know, they're going to bring someone else in. The newspaper today, the Cheese Boy, said that it's going to be Carol Lawson. Other people have thought it might be Antoine Jameson. I mean, I don't know who did it, who makes that decision. I don't know how high that goes. But Phil Chenier and Steve Buckhantz were very comfortable, very friendly. You know, you liked hearing them. What do you make of that?
I don't think there's anything I can add other than to say I agree with you. I think he was deserving. I thought as well it was sort of a head-scratcher. It wasn't like you were watching games thinking, oh, it's
past
this
guy. Oh, he's got to go.
Yeah,
he's
like,
done.
Like, there are broadcasts in town where you
sad.
Would feel that way.
Sad.
And that's very
right.
sad.
Sad, but true.
So yeah. happy to see
this
him
show?
Get in. And
this
sad
show.
To see him
this,
go.
I'm
this would be one of them for
I'm
sure.
I'm an idiot.
For
you know.
Sure.
So good for Phil Chenier. And
absolutely.
He's still going to work for the team. But,
yeah.
well, you know, why? You know, why they did why? Yeah. Tell me why. All right. What else?
The Mystics last night were up by two with 5 minutes to go in game two of the semifinal match
they
with
lose.
The Minnesota Lynx. But they were outscored 20-8, and they're now down... Two love.
Oh, good, because they're good in the single elimination rounds. So maybe this will
right.
suit them.
So here's the just statistically, Elena Deladon and Christy Tolliver both had 25 points.
What, did you look at the box score?
I did.
Oh, my God.
But the most interesting thing is this. They're kicked out. Is it still called the Verizon Center? What is it called?
It's called the Capital One Arena.
Yeah, Capital One.
Whatever it's called.
Right.
They're kicked out because there's the British red-haired kid, Ed Sheeran.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
right.
He's doing a concert which is going to sell a lot more beer than the Mystics are going to sell. He's going to fill a lot more seats and sell a lot more beer than the Mystics are going to sell. They have moved the Mystics to McDonough. McDonough Arena.
McDonough
on the Georgetown campus, which has
capacity like 50
bleacher
people.
Seating, if I remember
can
correctly.
Can I
2,500 capacity.
First-hand account, I have played basketball in McDonough. When I was in college, we played Georgetown in McDonough. It's like playing...
You were on the team?
I was on the team, yeah.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Yeah, yeah.
Down
you were all
us.
These
yeah.
years.
No,
what position did you play?
Well, I played forward, but... I only played freshman year because then it was much more fun to go to the Tombs at the 1789
oh,
after
sure.
school
right.
than
yeah.
to practice
okay.
basketball. But it is like playing on this
well,
work
you weren't
surface.
An AAU travel team girl. You're like,
no.
No, you're...
Okay. And it's like a high school gym.
It is. It is a high
yeah.
school gym, basically. Now, the Mystics... have apparently their lowest crowd of the year, if I read this correctly, is over 5,000. And that's not a great crowd, you know, but it's still larger. It's twice of what McDonough holds.
Yeah, and this is a playoff game.
What do we make if you're the WNBA and you go, wait, let me understand this. You had no faith in us. You booked in this guy.
Right. Third round of the playoffs? Oh, no problem.
Right.
And I don't know why they're playing McDonough at the Guy Mason Park down in Glover Park. I mean, there's courts right there.
It's outdoors.
Barry
outdoors
Park.
That would be fun, like the NHL game.
How should the Mystics feel? Elena Deladon's the best women's basketball player in the world.
So,
and Maya Moore might be the first. They're playing in this game. Yeah. They're really great players.
Yes.
I will take a contrarian position and say that if the place is jammed to the rafters and rocking, it might be a pretty cool atmosphere.
That's good for them. That would work. I've seen games in McDonough. I went for reasons beyond my comprehension and also beyond my memory. I went to a women's basketball game in McDonough once, and I don't
really... Was I playing?
No. I don't know why. Somebody I knew was obviously playing and asked me to go, and I don't remember why. And there was about, 40 people in the stands.
Well, I used to watch Georgetown play there when I was in college, and the Georgetown team played there, and Paul Tagliabue was on the team.
That's right. 2,500 was a pretty good crowd for Georgetown in the 60s.
Then. Right, yes.
What else you got?
Well, Mr. Tony, you can take the man out of Florida, but you can't take the Florida out of the man. Paul West, who is from Tampa, said, I'm going to leave my house. I'm going to go north to escape the wrath of the hurricane. So he went north to stay with his mother, who lives in Beverly, Massachusetts.
That's north.
Yes, that is much farther north, yes. So while Paul West was in Beverly, he decided to take a trip over to Salem, which is really just...
Witch country.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Did you ever see Salem Country Club? Did you ever see their logo?
No, I haven't.
It's a witch. Cool. Fantastic.
Well, there has
to be. It's fantastic.
Yeah. It's actually lovely little country up there. Yeah. I've traveled through there. Yeah, it's very nice. And so Paul West apparently was, this is on Tuesday, was in a place called the Cannon Hills area, which is a popular spot for runners, bicyclists, and children. And police responded to a call about a man with no pants doing some crazy bleep out in the open. When the officer arrived at a clearing, he noticed a man by a tree who wasn't wearing any pants and had a large sex toy in his hands. Once the man, later identified as West, recognized as a police officer in the area, he promptly began putting on pants and put the sex toy in a plastic bag while yelling out, "Hold on just a second, let me put my pants on."
I'll be right with you.
West was arrested. They found three notes describing sexually explicit acts. In the police report, the officer said he believes he's there to solicit a sex partner. West, however, told police he was only there to hike and was trying to go to the bathroom but was having trouble.
Is that right?
He said.
Story. I don't think he's going to win that case.
That's an excellent story.
By the way, if you pick up the Washington Post today in the Metro section, there is a picture of haikuist Shad.
Yes.
A very Shad own. Is playing golf. A picture of him in the Post on the Army course.
Yeah, very exciting.
Right by Catholic University and the Washington Hospital Center in that area.
Nice balanced
good swing.
Yeah, it looked like a nice follow.
Good swing for Shad. All right, we good?
We are.
All right, so what do we have when we return?
We have Old Guard Radio and the return of Chuck Todd.
Fantastic. Yes. We're waiting for Chuck Todd. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Blue Apron read, and I say this a lot. I think with fall coming, by the winter, I think I'm going to re-sign up for Blue Apron.
You really like cooking with this.
I do. I like it. I mean, I'm not as good as Gary. I'm not as good as Gene. I'm not as good as Michael. But I can cook this. I can serve it.
Agreed, by the way. It makes me happy. Made by all four of those people, and I would agree.
That's right.
I'm not even on the list.
That contention, although I haven't eaten anything you've made via Blue Apron.
But they don't send garlic powder, I'm pretty sure.
We got enough. They'll send garlic.
Yeah,
they send a lot of shallots.
Shallots, right.
It's affordable. For less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. You choose from a variety of new recipes each week, or you can let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Recipes not repeated within the year. You'll never get bored. You can customize your recipes each week based on your own preference. Blue Apron has several delivery options. You can choose what fits your need. There's no weekly commitment. You only get deliveries when you want them. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients. It can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. You usually need two people. You may have two or three pots going at the same time, so you need a couple of people. And that that fosters closeness. Blue Apron's freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook or they will make it right. And for a limited time, starting September 4th, which was last week, Blue Apron will be delivering recipes inspired by the winning dishes on MasterChef. If you tune in to MasterChef on Fox every Wednesday at 8 Eastern and 7 Central, you visit Blue Apron every Thursday to see and select the winning recipe to cook in your own home. Visit blueapron.com/TonyK. You get your first three meals free. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
Surfing is the only life, the only way for me now, surf.
This is Old Guy Radio.
Surf.
You can hear Mike Love in the lead on this. This is the first song I think the Beach Boys ever did. You have an explanation for this under the area of critical commentary.
Yes, this is the anniversary of their audition. And when they auditioned, they didn't audition as the Beach Boys, it was the Pendletones.
Was it the Pendletones or the Pendletons?
It was the Pendletones.
Because Pendletones sounds just like the O'Neaters.
It's no, yeah.
You
it
know,
was the Pendletones.
That thing you do. Okay.
Right.
And that was a particular type of shirt and jacket.
A preppy
Pendleton
thing.
Jacket.
And so they sang.
I have one at home. Theirs were blue.
They sang a bunch of cover songs and they were like, the people at the recording studio were like, no, you got anything original? And then Brian Wilson said, yeah, we've got one. And but it's not ready yet. Can we play it for you a little later? So then they went back and they did this song. One of the record producers was like, I hate it. The other one was like, this is going to be a hit.
Yeah.
They sent it off to radio stations, and they played it. And one guy actually just took the liberty to change the name of the band himself, called them the Beach Boys, because like it just sounds better than the Pendletones.
It does.
And then they were driving around just like they were in that thing you
and
do.
And they heard themselves.
And they heard it, and they said they freaked out. In fact, Dennis remembers they got so excited hearing our record on the radio that Carl threw up. Yeah. So, but there you go.
Dennis and Carl both go on to us now.
Yes.
Both go on to us now. Chuck Todd joins us now. Chuck started out 2-0 and then fell onto hard times and ended up 2-5. Before we get to your picks, though, you did an excursion to the Virgin Islands yesterday, yes?
I did. That's why I know anxiously. Littles were wondering what are his picks going to be, and they weren't there yesterday.
No, so Littles were wondering, did they dump him yet? We
yeah,
said
well,
no.
Rob, that was really my fear. Exactly. you're like, you know, worse than the Houston Texans coach. You're just yanking me after a half.
Never do it. So what was in the Virgin? What happened at the Virgin Islands?
So the Virgin Islands, obviously, they've been hit. Yeah. They got hit by Irma, Category 5. When it hit, gusts of over 200 miles an hour when it hit in St. John. So went down there, Michael Bloomberg, former mayor of New York City, he had a business partner that had a house down there, and the business partner sounded the alarm. He said, hey, this place has been just devastated, and it's not getting a lot of attention. For obvious reasons, all right, Texas and Florida, not exactly small problems for the country to focus on. But this is a part of America. And so I had already was supposed to interview Bloomberg today, actually, in an interview that was going to be for Sunday, just a regular old sort of check-in. And instead he says, hey, I'm going down here. You want to hitch a ride? So I did. And I tell you, I went through Andrew, and it did look – here was a place 10 days after the storm hit that to me looked like the storm had just hit yesterday. You know, it was – look, the people are trying – to do the best they can, but these are islands. Where do you put the debris, right? You need barges. You got to remove the debris from the island. You got to bring in these resources. You know, they have the power lines. So many of them were down. It felt like speed bumps on the road. You were going over so many power lines. It is, I would say the one thing, that feeling when you know you're in America versus when you know you're not, when you're in you know, and you just know when you're in a foreign country, like, boy, when America does, you know, handles this, this wouldn't look like this, or it wouldn't function like this. It feels like America hasn't been there yet, and this is America, the Virgin Islands. So that's and again, part of it is just the difficulty of marshaling these resources to these islands, because it isn't, you can't just fly them all in. You got to barge some of them in, and sometimes money isn't the only answer. You need physical resources. You need the power guys to come there. And right now, a bunch of them are still in Florida.
I think the most famous person from the Virgin Islands that I know of is Tim Duncan.
He was there, actually. Yes. Michael Bloomberg also flew him, you know, helped. Actually, I think Tim Duncan donated his own money, flew down supplies as well. But they have hooked up a little bit. I spent most of the day touring the island with Tim Duncan as well. He went through Hugo when he was a kid on St. Croix. And that was a pretty, he wrote about it, I think, in the Players Tribune earlier this week. But we talked about it. It was a pretty scarring experience for him. And his great memory was not the first couple days. He said it was 6 months later. And it felt like the devastation was still there. And that was sort of his message down there, which is, it's don't forget about us in 6 months. And don't forget that, you know, tourism, you know, the tourism industry down there is the lifeline, is the lifeblood. It's what everybody's job is essentially connected to. So while we may think in the States, oh, why should we bother to hurry up and fix resorts down there? For them, that's jobs.
Well, I mean, I've been saying this a while. You can get water, and you can get toys, and you can get clothes, and you can get them quick, but you can't rebuild quick. That takes months and months and maybe years. It does. I mean, just you just can't. I mean, I saw that through Sandy, through people that we know. It took 8-9 months to get the houses right, and they had all the resources available to them. So that's not the quick part, and that's why you say don't forget about these people, because it's going to take a very long time, obviously.
No, and you got to bring people. I mean, somebody's got to build these homes.
Yeah.
They build these homes, and you got to physically get the labor down there. It's like, look, the money's going to come. That isn't going to be the issue.
That's right.
It is going to be the it's going to be the doing.
All right, let's pick games. Let's pick games.
All right, brother.
Because you're 2-5. You know what I'm saying? You got to get better.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
There are some spreads here that are interesting to me. New England got beat at home. New England goes to New Orleans, a team that is now 0-1 with some problems with Adrian Peterson and Sean Payton. New England gives 6.5 on the road. Honestly, that seems like a lot to me. What do you think?
You know, I would have said yes, but I watched that New Orleans game. I bought into New Orleans a little bit.
Yes, you did. You picked them. Yeah.
That doesn't look like a very good football team. That looks like that looks like a football team very out of sync. And do we really think the Pats start out 0-2?
It's hard to think that.
Just feels and there is a there's something, you know, the angry Brady look. I still like see it at the end of that game against Kansas City. If I can lay less than a touchdown and take the Patriots, it's hard not to take that.
You can.
Hard not to take that.
You can lay 6.5.
Even against Orleans, so I'm in. Okay. I don't like going against home dogs very often early in the season, but I think a revenge, sort of the right the ship game for the Pats.
All right. An interesting game. Philadelphia is at Kansas City. Andy Reid coached in Philadelphia before he coached in Kansas City. Andy Reid weighed about 200 pounds more when he coached in Philadelphia than in Kansas City. Kansas City looked good and has had 10 days. Philadelphia looked pretty good, too, on the road beating the Redskins. Philadelphia's getting 5.5. That's a pretty big number. What do you got?
It is a big number. That's because nobody likes to bet against Kansas City at home.
Right.
They are a great home team, and they cover at home. I'd be more into the Eagles here if I was convinced the Redskins were a good football team.
They're not.
Yeah. So give me Kansas City, land the points. By the way, though, I wouldn't touch this game with real money for what it's worth. That's pretty too high.
I understand.
Sorry, I think it's too high. I wish it were 3. There's no way I'm putting money on that game. It feels like no, I hate that spread.
All of these games we're giving you, except the Washington game, all of these games are great games.
They really are.
Early in the season, Minnesota, which won at home, is at Pittsburgh, which won at home. Minnesota, which scored no points last year, suddenly Sam Bradford looked great, and they got enough points. Pittsburgh, they're getting 6. Minnesota's getting 6. That seems like a lot, doesn't it?
I thought that was too much. Look, there is a... What is it if it's a short week, they're going on the road, so there is some, I think, you know, I'm not going to sit here, but I think there's some, if I were giving you my 5-star, gold star pick, or whatever it is, right? I think some crazy trend line on Monday night winners who go on the road, blah, blah, blah. Look, Steelers didn't look like a great football team against Cleveland. They looked out of sync. That said, we know it takes a while for Le'Veon Bell. It's still his preseason. I get that. But Minnesota's a good football team. That's just a solid football team. That's too many points. Give me the Vikings.
You're going to take the Vikings. That's going to make 2s and Paulson very, very happy. Dallas, they haven't suspended him yet. Ezekiel Elliott is playing, and Ezekiel Elliott was terrific in the first game. They go on the road to Denver. Denver barely won, if I'm not mistaken, barely won that game. Held on, blocked a field goal in the last second against the Chargers. Dallas, you give 2.5. You going to do it?
I guess I am. This is another one I wouldn't put real money on. I don't like betting against Denver at home, especially when – how often does Denver get points at home?
Very rarely. Like, very rarely.
Yeah, that has to be like a once-a-year, if that much, scenario. But Dallas is – it's look, it's a field goal. If it's field goal spread, Dallas is – if you think Dallas is the better team, I do. I'll take them. But, again, I'm not putting real money on that one.
Here's the best game. This is Green Bay at Atlanta. 100%. Green Bay now opens up. Green Bay gets Seattle at home and then goes to Atlanta. There's no harder NFC open, right, Chuck, than those two. It's just it can't be any harder than that. And they get 3 at Atlanta.
I know it's Atlanta's home opener. By the way, did you like what Aaron Rodgers did in trolling Chick-fil-A? He says, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's too bad Chick-fil-A's not open.
yeah, it's not open Sundays, kids.
I'm sorry. That doesn't make any sense. You know, can't this be what forces Chick-fil-A to say, all right, we will at least open up on Sundays.
And it's really good, Chick-fil-A.
Just really good. All I want is airports. There's no worse feeling than changing planes in Atlanta and then having to change planes in Atlanta and Chick-fil-A's not open. It's bad enough. Give me the Packers because I'm so embarrassed that I picked against them last week and they won. My team, it kills me. Give me the Pack. They're going to cover. Aaron Rodgers is going to smoke Matt Ryan.
Detroit getting 3.5 at the Giants. Detroit won. Matthew Stafford, I think they had a late drive that clinched the game. The Giants got nothing. Nothing at all. 3 points in the entire game. They are at home. Odell Beckham is now talking about a 6 to 8 week injury, and so that causes doubt in your mind that Odell Beckham Jr. will get in the game. He's a game changer for Eli Manning and has been for a couple of years. Are you tempted to the Giants don't usually lose in a home opener. Are you tempted to take the 3.5? Or are you going to take the Giants?
No, I don't like going home dogs, but I actually like putting money on this one. I think the Lions are. I think they can. They may not win, but I think that I love the half point. And can the Giants score?
I don't know.
How are they going to score?
I don't know.
Who is this running back that no one has ever heard of?
Paul
did
Perkins?
He get what was it? 7 carries for 16 yards. Was that what he did, Perkins?
Yeah. I don't know who he is.
They were pretty one-dimensional.
But
they
those
were
Adrian actually, they were, Peterson yeah.
they were,
numbers.
They were zero-dimensional without Odell Beckham.
They had nothing. They had nothing.
I can't figure out how they score points. And, you know, Detroit takes a while to wake up, but they woke up again. You know, you got to give Stafford credit. The guy seems to answer the call in the fourth quarter.
Look at Chuck taking all these road teams
again.
I know.
Look at Chuck.
It's fun.
All right.
I'm going to get killed. This is such a violation.
Last game is Washington at the L.A. Rams. The Rams cannot be that good. They cannot be that good. Now, they may be good enough to beat.
They weren't that good.
They may be good enough to beat the Redskins, but they can't be that good. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, I watch a lot of red zone, and that was an afternoon red zone. And what I would do is I was flipping between Packers, Seahawks, and every time you hit an ad, you go over to red zone.
Yeah.
And you end up with the best of the crappy games, right? You know?
Mm-hmm.
The Rams didn't look good. It's just the Colts are terrible.
They are terrible. They're terrible.
They are terrible.
Without Andrew Luck, they're a non-squad. So you're going to take the Redskins?
But you know what? I'm picking the Rams because I have a feeling I want to hear. Here's why. I smell 0-2, and I smell the Washington panic in the air.
Yeah.
And Monday, and you guys in the podcast, and Gary going bonkers. I mean, I can feel it. The 0-2 storyline is much more interesting for Washington. I think Redskins fans right now enjoy losing because they enjoy getting angry. But I think it will feel better to be 0-2.
So this is a wish bet.
Don't psychoanalyze.
It's a wish bet.
I think it'll feel better because we know this isn't a good team.
It's not.
They're not going anywhere. So let's, why be mediocre? Go all the way.
All right, so I will see
you. Don't strive for mediocrity.
I'll see you tomorrow night, yes?
That's what I hear.
Okay, yeah, we'll see you tomorrow night.
It'll be a fun time.
By the way, if the Redskins do, Chuck, lose that game, they're then halfway home
to losing to McVay and Kyle Shanahan in the same season, which would be, I mean, that is when my head would explode.
It, right?
Yeah.
That's the other part of this, though. Almost, you can just feel the Shakespearean aspect of this with 0-2 to what you
Raiders and Chiefs on deck after these two for the Skins.
Tough. That's right. Tough.
Yeah.
That's tough.
That'll feel great.
Thank you, Chuck.
All right, guys.
Chuck Todd of Meet the Press, and also of this show at this point. Picking games.
For we'll how see. Long? We'll
don't
see
know.
At
we
2
don't
and
know.
5.
We don't know. And if we just gave you Chuck, that would be enough. But we don't just give you Chuck, and we may have a new jingle.
And now we bring you a monkey whose Polaroids are quite captivating and might be better at prognosticating then Chuck Todd.
That's really good. Yes, that's really good.
Thank you, Brad Weiss.
Brad Weiss, that's
yes,
really
the littles
good.
Really came through with that. So
you went to see Reginald.
I did, and when I went to his cage, which is really more of a condominium at the National Zoo, he was on a video conference call with President Trump, Nancy Pelosi, and Chuck Schumer, working out those details for
good.
The DACA agreement.
That's great.
And then I looked over on his cabinet. His passport was out, and I saw a plane ticket. He's flying commercial because he doesn't want to take taxpayer monies. He's
right.
going to Pyongyang.
Exactly.
I think he's going to figure this thing out with Kim Jong-un.
So he's Mnuchin, the anti-Mnuchin.
Yes.
He's not flying on a government military jet.
He's made plenty of money betting on games. He's going to fund this himself.
That's good.
But he told Trump and Pelosi and Schumer, hold on, I've got to pick these games
Reginald,
with Nigel.
Reginald, 2-1, again two off to a winning start after multiple winning years.
That's what he does. So the first game we gave him was New England at New Orleans, giving 6.5. And he showed me an old photograph of him at Commander's Palace having etouffee with Archie Manning and James Carville.
There
so he loves the Saints in this. Going to take them getting 6.5 at home. Now, the next game he gave him was Pittsburgh at home giving 6 to the Vikings. Normally, he's got strong ties to Bud Grant. Thought he was going to be taking the Vikings with us, but no. He shows me a little video clip. It's actually an old home movie of him and Terry Bradshaw in the late, great Kent DeCulvey looked to be in a parade.
Kent DeCulvey?
Yeah, that's right.
6'8", 125.
Right. The great submarine closure.
Yes.
Right. It was in a parade in downtown Pittsburgh. They're all sitting in the back of a big convertible, waving to the crowd.
Fantastic.
So Reginald skews old. Noticed that?
Well, monkeys are deceptively old, and he's an old soul. So, so he clearly is going to take Pittsburgh in that game. And, of course, we always give him the Washington game.
Yeah.
And he showed me, this is just a snapshot someone took of him, with Dave Butts and Mike Nelms hiking the Billy Goat Trail at Great Falls.
So he's taking the Redskins.
Going to take the Redskins.
He's going to go against Chuck Todd.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
Interesting that we go against Chuck on that one.
I don't know. Thank you. We'll take a break. When we come back, we will have email, right? We'll have email and a jingle.
That's right.
Okay. I'm Tony Kornheiser. I forgot to say that.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
They're at Wisconsin and Jennifer Street, podcast are cracking wise. No longer writes and he still don't tweet, his every idea he will vocalize. There he goes again, he gets going, he's that ranting guy. Tone, you lost your grip. There he goes again, same old opinions he will speechify. Like an old record that skips. Tony Kornheiser. Tony Kornheiser. Must be losing his mind.
John Fitzpatrick of Arlington, Virginia, who writes, here's 1 minute of your lives you won't get back, but you might get a chuckle. John Fitzpatrick is really smart.
Good.
And really a really good person.
Yes.
Before we get into the mailbag, I want to say thanks to Chuck Todd of Meet the Press, and Ann Hornaday of the Washington Post, and of course James Carville of Parts Unknown for coming on the show. I'd also like to thank our sponsors today, Blue Apron, Harry's Razors, and Spotify. Please support them the way they support our podcast. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen through iTunes, please leave us a review.
And before
you want to talk.
Yeah, I'm sorry, before we get to the mail, I just want to say I met a wonderful little last night. I was out at Fiola Mara having a lovely meal, and Jackie Wu from Boston was down in town for a couple of days. Just a lovely guy, loves the show, loves you.
Good.
So
hi,
Jackie.
Good to know. Jim Nelson in South Sioux City, Nebraska. South Sioux City, Nebraska. I've heard of Sioux City, Iowa, but I guess you're right on the border at that
point. Probably a little south of it.
He goes, my account balance this morning is 121314. Thought you'd want to know. From Joey B, because it's hard to pronounce, Joey Bonskowski. Harriet Faye Bonskowski, nicknamed Hattie, the baby who lives in my house, to whom I'm related by paternity, arrived last Thursday, and we are overjoyed. In order to stand out amongst all the other strollers in Park Slope, we would love a sticker to place on the back of ours, and I'm already teaching her to give the other babies a TK salute. As you can see from the picture, she is quite a looker, so please tell Michael I will accept dowry offers on behalf of Bootsy.
Congrats to Joey B.
We have two letters here about the same. Anthony Pellegrino in Thousand Oaks, California, and John Rosans in Salinas, California, and they speak to Chris Saliza talking about the fact that with the power out, all you have to do in the nursing home, he said, I'm sure they have elevators. And they point out that if the power is out, it is unlikely that the elevators, which run on electricity, would be able to do this.
And it wouldn't be safe to just drop the elderly people down the shaft.
John Rosen says, I'm not a graduate of the Loomis Chafee School for the Rich or Georgetown, but even I know the one thing you need to run an elevator is power. And if that place didn't have emergency generators for air conditioning, I'm fairly certain there'd be none for the elevator. Thanks for playing, Chris. Your analysis and acumen remain unparalleled. Yeah. That's a little bit nastier than Anthony's in Thousand Oaks. He said, by no means trying to exonerate anyone, the story was about how hot the nursing home due to lack of power, and last I checked, elevators run on
none of the four of us called him out on that, of course.
No.
It's true.
So
no.
From Steve Pietatilla, in Yankton, South Dakota, since you appear to be in this for money, might I suggest raising some additional income by starting a Tony Kornheiser reality tour? Michael and Nigel could tour people around D.C. on a minibus. Stops would include Columbia Country Club, the Refugee Safeway, Calvert Woodley, and the PTI Studios. Pizza bagels from Chatter would be served. Do we have those? Along with the dessert, your favorite candy, a Sky Bar. Saliza, a minor celebrity. If you go on this thing, it would create a minor
stir. Didn't Negrelli do that at the last Jingle Fest?
Yes, that's right. What happened.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Blake DeDonis in Starkville, Mississippi, which is the home of Mississippi State, I believe. I'm a day behind the podcast, but Nigel briefly mentioned the Mystics getting destroyed by the Lynx in Game 1 in the WNBA semifinals. And
now it's Game 2.
It's Game 2.
Right.
And you all cruised right along past it. Hold it a gosh darn minute. As the son-in-law and the head coach and GM of the Mystics, Mike Thibault, right, I believe.
Right.
I will not allow this to happen. This is a professional Washington, D.C. team in the semifinals of their playoffs. I demand you treat them with the respect you give all the other D.C. pro sports teams.
Uh-oh.
And give them your calling card of love, damn choking dogs. And I certainly could have done that.
Well, we do crowdsource the programming here, so thanks
we could do that.
Suggestion.
Mark in Falls Church, Virginia, sand. Really, what's next? A pile of leaves. And speaking to pile of leaves, the leaf blower has his own account.
Yeah, leaf blower guy opened a Twitter account. Apparently.
Yeah, it was nice. Everybody has their contributions to the show.
Ray Dubicki in Seattle, Washington. Listening to the show during a dental cleaning, I could only hear about half of the conversation. The dental drill seems to have the same resonance as Saliza's voice, leaving some gaps in the commentary. It's probably the best show in recent memory. So if you could play with the levels on Chris's mic, that would be appreciated. Mike Rosenberry, State College, Pennsylvania. Saliza says Shkreli. Is that how it's pronounced?
Shkreli.
Has the most punchable face ever. This is a too close to call situation. I make Saliza a half to 1.5 point favorite there. If he's wearing a Georgetown windbreaker, the line jumps between him.
Windbreaker.
Can I just say for the record, we love Chris
Saliza.
He is welcome here all days and any day. We love Chris Saliza, and we know he laughs at this. We hope you don't really mean it. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do our way to thank you for coming.
Thank you.
I have a piano. I wake and blink the morning clear. You run your fingers through the wind.
want your arms wrapped around me with closed tight eyes and a heart that aches, a life for its size that's burning mansions down and dance until the distant morning comes around with heads and broken hearts. You do your best to pick up all the parts, to pick up all of
hanging out, wasting time.